Hello, I'm Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, Pashinyan and Aliyev meet in Tirana. The EU continues to signal support for Armenia-Azerbaijan peace deal, and Armenia's first elected woman mayor resigns. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news.
Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan is in Tirana, Albania, for the sixth summit of the European Political Community. On the sidelines, he held a series of bilateral meetings with international leaders. Pashinyan and Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev also met on the sidelines of the summit. According to the Prime Minister's press office, the two leaders emphasized the importance of reaching an agreement on the text of the Armenia-Azerbaijan peace deal. They discussed the current situation and stressed the need to continue the process towards its signing. In separate talks, Pashinyan met with European Council President Antonio Costa and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Their discussions focused on deepening Armenia-EU ties, highlighting democratic reforms, economic integration, infrastructure development, and the path towards EU accession. Both European leaders welcomed Armenia's recent legislative move towards EU membership and stressed the importance of accelerating visa liberalization. Following the meeting, von der Leyen posted on X that she and Costa congratulated the leaders of Armenia and Azerbaijan on finalizing the peace treaty. She called it a major step forwards and added that Brussels is looking forward to its swift signature. According to the EU official, the European Union is ready to invest in regional connectivity, aiming to bring the whole region closer together and closer to the Union. Pashinyan also held a meeting with Albanian Prime Minister Edi Rama. The two discussed key issues on the Armenia-Albania agenda and looked at ways to expand cooperation across various sectors. This marks the sixth time Prime Minister Pashinyan has joined the EPC summit. The European Political Community, or EPC, is an intergovernmental forum launched in 2022 at the initiative of the French President Emmanuel Macron in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It brings together European leaders to discuss political and strategic issues shaping the region's future. The first EPC meeting took place in Prague in October of 2022. It was that summit that Armenia and Azerbaijan recognized each other's territorial integrity, and the European Union monitoring mission was launched following Azerbaijan's attack on Armenian territory the previous month.
While in Tirana, Pashinyan also met with EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Kaya Kallas. Earlier, Kallas had told reporters that Armenia and Azerbaijan are close to signing the peace agreement. She added that everyone is interested in seeing this agreement signed. And in this vein, Steve Witkoff, Special Envoy for U.S. President Donald Trump, said this week that Armenia and Azerbaijan are close, he actually said very, very close, to a peace deal and could be among the next countries to join the Abraham Accords. Now, we've been having this discussion for the last couple of days, Rubina, about the Abraham Accords. So let's just sort of do a quick dive into what this means. These are a series of diplomatic agreements that were launched in 2020 between Israel and several Arab countries, starting with the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, and later joined by Sudan and Morocco. The accords aim to normalize relations and promote cooperation in areas like trade, tourism, and security, brokered by the U.S. under President Trump during his first term. The accords marked a major shift in Middle East diplomacy by establishing ties between Israel and countries that had previously withheld formal recognition. And we know that these accords were meant to be almost transactional. So those Arab countries or Muslim countries that signed these accords with Israel would get a lot of incentives from the United States, whether it was forgiving huge loans or perhaps
giving new loans.
And now under Trump's second term, the administration is seeking to expand the accords. Witkoff said that while global attention is currently on Iran, the war in Ukraine, and the conflict in Gaza, diplomatic efforts are ongoing to bring new countries into what he called this, what he's now calling the Abraham Peace Accords. He mentioned Lebanon, Syria, and Libya as possible future signatories, and surprisingly included Armenia, Azerbaijan had already been in discussions about it, and Azerbaijan among the countries that might join, according to Witkoff. As I said at the top, the two are very, very close to reaching a peace agreement, and both may be open to joining the accords. He emphasized that this is a huge initiative for President Trump, who sees it as a vehicle for promoting peace and stability more broadly in the region. So, interesting development.
And the Armenian foreign minister responded, actually, to several media inquiries, saying that Armenia and America cover a range of topics that are currently in discussions. These include the already established strategic partnership, mm-hmm. as well as initiatives aimed at promoting peace in the region, which, according to the spokesperson of the foreign ministry, could open new opportunities. Right. So this is an indirect and yet direct answer.
Direct answer. Meanwhile, Foreign Minister Arat Mirzoyan was in Luxembourg this week to take part in the 134th ministerial session of the Council of Europe. In his speech, Mirzoyan spoke about a number of pressing global challenges, including the erosion of multilateralism, weakening of human rights systems, democratic backsliding, and growing public disillusionment with democratic institutions. He also pointed to hybrid threats as part of the increasingly complex global landscape. Mirzoyan underscored the importance of restoring trust in democratic governance, strengthening its fundamental principles, and adapting it to current realities. He expressed support for the new Democratic Pact for Europe, a Council of Europe initiative aimed at revitalizing and reinforcing democratic governance across the continent. Armenia, he noted, is ready to actively contribute to achieving the initiative's goals, making democracy more resilient, inclusive, and future-ready.
Well, Armenia's defense minister, Suren Papikyan, was in Berlin this week for the UN peacekeeping ministerial meeting, which focuses on the challenges facing peacekeeping missions today and priorities for reform. On the sidelines of the event, Papikyan met with his German counterpart to discuss the state of Armenia-Germany defense cooperation and explore ways to deepen the partnership. They also exchanged views on regional and global security dynamics. He also met with the UK minister for the armed forces. The two agreed to boost defense ties between Armenia and the UK, including plans to appoint defense attachés in each country. In addition to these official talks, Papikyan had informal conversations with defense ministers from China, Kazakhstan, and Georgia, as well as with the UN Secretary General and Germany's foreign minister. And on May 14, Papikyan addressed the ministerial meeting, reaffirming Armenia's commitment to global peacekeeping. He announced new contributions, including sending trained personnel to UN missions, hosting international training programs in Armenia, and increasing the participation of women in peacekeeping operations.
Armenia's diplomatic and security agenda, obviously, as we can see, was packed this past week. While the foreign and defense ministers were in Europe, Security Council Secretary Armen Grigorian was in India. In New Delhi, he met with Ajit Doval. He is the national security advisor to Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The two discussed a wide range of issues on the bilateral agenda, focusing on deepening economic ties and ongoing security cooperation. They also touched on broader international and regional developments, such as the recent tension along the India-Pakistan border and Armenia-Azerbaijan normalization process. India has become one of Armenia's key defense partners in recent years, alongside France and Greece. Grigorian then traveled to Iran, where he took part in the Tehran Dialogue Forum 2025. Working meetings are also planned, and we don't have any concrete news yet. The Tehran Dialogue Forum is an annual diplomatic and policy-oriented conference organized by the Institute for Political and International Studies. This is an arm of Iran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It serves as a platform for high-level discussions on regional and international security, economic cooperation, and diplomatic relations.
It's definitely dialogue, forum, and summit season.
week. You're right.
Well, the Russian ambassador to Armenia, Sergei Kopyrkin, has sent an open letter to Armenia's defense minister, Suren Papikyan, regarding statements made by former Ministry of Defense spokesperson Arzun Hovhannisyan during a TV interview, who currently leads the Command Staff Institute of the Ministry of Defense Military Academy. In an interview, and this was on Armenia's public TV, marking the Soviet Union's victory in World War II, Hovhannisyan called the claim that the USSR's victory at the Battle of Stalingrad saved Armenia from a Turkish invasion a myth. He also said that the victory in World War II was made possible thanks to U.S. lend-lease program and the opening of the second front. In his letter, Ambassador Kopyrkin described Hovhannisyan's remarks as false and vile, accusing him of justifying the aggression of fascist Germany. Kopyrkin added that it's hard to see this as anything other than an attempt to desecrate the memory of heroic ancestors who stopped Hitler's plans to enslave and destroy the peoples of the USSR and who saved humanity from the Brown Plague.
Yeah, he called it blasphemous, I think, also.
And he called that it was a holy day. Well, not to downplay the victory and nothing, sure. But this Arzun Hovhannisyan is not a state official at this point.
But he's seen, I guess, as
someone, yes. Mm-hmm. Zakharova would have something to say about this pretty soon, I think, as well.
Well, we're going to go back to Armenia, Azerbaijan, although everything is related in our region. So while foreign officials suggest that Armenia and Azerbaijan are close to signing a peace agreement, Azerbaijan continues to push for, you know, a lot of the things that it's demanding from Armenia, in this case, constitutional changes as a precondition. Yesterday, during the EPC, the European Political Community Summit, Armenia's Prime Minister Pashinyan answered questions from an Azerbaijani reporter, restating Yerevan's well-known position on the conditions set by Azerbaijan for signing a peace deal. This includes the dissolution of the OSC Minsk group and changes to Armenia's constitution. Pashinyan said the application to the OSC to dissolve the Minsk group should happen simultaneously with the peace agreement's signing. He also emphasized that Armenia's constitution contains no territorial claims against any neighboring country and reiterated that all outstanding issues raised by Azerbaijan will be resolved with the signing of the treaty, as it will have supremacy over local national legislation. In response, Azerbaijan's foreign ministry, through its spokesperson Ayhan Hajizadeh, dismissed Pashinyan's statements. He argued that Armenia's constitution does pose territorial threats to Azerbaijan. Citing Article 5, Hajizadeh pointed out that the constitution holds supreme legal authority and the prime minister's reference to international treaties overriding the constitution is irrelevant. He also noted that Armenia's code of... Now they moved on to the code of arms.
Yes, that's the news item.
That's the news item in all of this.
Yeah, everything else we knew.
Mentioned in Article 21, symbolizes territorial claims against neighbors. According to the spokesperson, no matter what treaties Armenia signs, these constitutional provisions remain clearly serving a specific agenda. He went further, suggesting that Armenia's refusal to address these constitutional issues shows that Yerevan is not committed to a lasting peace, but is instead preserving options for future aggression. He criticized Armenia's resistance to officially dissolving the Minsk group, viewing it as a way to delay progress and maintain a hidden agenda against Azerbaijan.
Well, this week, Azerbaijan resumed its accusations of ceasefire violations, to continue Maria on the on the subject, while also continuing to fire both targeted and indiscriminate shots towards border villages in Armenia's Syunik and Tavush regions. Armenia's defense ministry denied the accusations on May 10 and again on May 14. It also reported that on the night of May 9, Azerbaijani forces opened fire towards the village of Khenadzakh in Syunik, damaging the roof of a house. The ministry called on the Azerbaijani side to investigate the shelling and provide public clarifications, as it has been the case for several months now. Residents of Movses village in Armenia's northern Tavush region also reported hearing intensive gunfire. They noted that while such incidents usually occurred at night over the past months, and there were like specific time slots that from 10 p.m. until 7 a.m.
It's always
in the morning,
same, yeah.
This week, Azerbaijani forces fired during the day as well.
The wife of Viken Ülcekcan has told CivilNet that her husband has been on a 15-day hunger strike to in order to be allowed to call home. She said he managed to call last week, but they were only able to speak for 3 minutes. Ülcekcan is a Lebanese-Armenian civilian who was living in Shushi and who was captured by Azerbaijani forces after the 2020 hostilities and is now serving a 20-year sentence on charges of terrorism and illegal border crossing. You know, in fact, he was working as a taxi driver. He happened to be in Shushi when the war ended. And I mean, 20 years, it's just mind-boggling. The last time that the wife spoke with him over the phone was on February 21 through Red Cross mediation. Linda, who is the wife, said she currently has no information on Vikend's health following the hunger strike and is waiting for a response from the Red Cross, which unfortunately and tragically is in the process of shutting down operations in Azerbaijan. This is the ICRC, right? The International Committee for the Red Cross. The hunger strike was first reported by Argentinian Armenian scholar and academic Luciana Minasian, the organization, and she's also part of the an organization called the Society for Orphaned Armenian Relief. The organization sent a letter to the ICRC presenting Vikend's situation and calling for urgent action. The letter highlights that while international humanitarian law guarantees prisoners of war the right to communicate regularly with their families, Azerbaijani authorities have blocked the Red Cross access to the detention facility where Vikend and others are being held, and this has cut them off from the outside world, their families, and crucial humanitarian oversight. And, you know, the trials in Baku of the other Armenians is an ongoing situation.
Yes, of course. And, you know, 15-day hunger strike and hardly anyone knows about it.
Sure.
Eventually we find out about it. And the result is a less than a 3-minute conversation mm-hmm. with his wife.
Yeah.
Just to put things
into
in
perspective. Yeah.
Well, and in local news, a serviceman died this week from electrocution. According to the defense ministry, the circumstances remain unclear and an investigation is underway to determine exactly what happened. We say the same sentence
every week,
well, whether it's a gunshot situation or any other situation or electrocution, and never find answers actually at the end. Mm-hmm. This marks the fourth non-combat death in the armed forces so far this year.
Yeah. Well, this week in Yerevan, Armenian cognac producers and cargo transporters held a protest outside the Georgian embassy, raising concerns over what they call unusual and repeated inspections of Armenian alcohol shipments, mainly destined for Russia and the Baltic states that pass through Georgian territory. An embassy rep met with the protesters, asked for a list of the companies who were participating, saying that the list would be reviewed and next steps determined. Later, the embassy announced that it had already contacted authorities in Tbilisi and was awaiting a response regarding the resolution of the issue. And what is the issue? So for the past month, Georgian authorities have been inspecting shipments of Armenian alcoholic beverages at the Lars checkpoint. No official explanation has been provided for these checks, which industry representatives say are out of the ordinary. Since the drinks are not being sold in Georgia and are simply passing through, producers say they don't understand why their cargo is being stopped. Long waits at the border have caused shipment delays and financial losses. Economy Minister Gevorg Baboyan said that the Armenian side is aware of the issue and they are in contact with Georgian officials. He added that he may even travel to Tbilisi to address the matter personally. While he didn't disclose the reason behind the inspections, he noted that Georgian authorities have promised to implement interim measures to ease delays until a final resolution is reached.
You know, we report this news, but in regards to Russia, where all of a sudden Armenian imports to Russia are stopped and are going through inspections. Mm. And usually it's not Georgia that does this. So.
Yeah. Well, things are changing in Georgia.
And yesterday, Vahar Shabat, this is Echmiadzin's mayor, Diana Gasparian, announced that she will be stepping down in the near future, though she did not specify an exact date. She said her decision comes from wanting to prioritize her family and newborn child. Gasparian was the first woman elected mayor in Armenia since independence. After the Velvet Revolution, she was appointed acting mayor by Prime Minister Pashinyan in June of 2018 and then officially elected in October of 2018 of the same year. And just like as a little side note, Echmiadzin was not one of the most peaceful and easy cities.
There are a lot of clans and tribal issues.
And it was fascinating at the time to have a woman as mayor
and
there.
A young woman.
And a young woman. She's a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, her husband's family has been involved in corruption scandals. However, back in December of 2023, HEDC reported that Gasparyan's in-laws acquired community land and without waiting for permits began construction works. The anti-corruption committee is investigating the case still. Gasparyan herself was also fined 300,000 Armenian drams. This is approximately $770 by the Anti-Corruption Commission for actions related to the disconflict of interest. Much more recently, it was revealed that the Echmiadzin municipality signed a fuel purchase order with a company owned by Gasparyan's father-in-law. At the time, Gasparyan said she was not aware of the transaction and promised to implement measures to prevent similar conflicts of interest in the future.
Well, this week, prosecutors launched a new corruption case involving Armenia's former presidents. New charges were brought against former President Serzh Sarkisyan related to a 20-year-old land deal he approved while he was defense minister. The case centers around land on Isakov Avenue and adjacent to the Yeraglur military pantheon, which was ultimately transferred to Toyota Yerevan, a company partially owned by the family of Armenia's second president, Robert Kocharyan. According to the indictment, the land was sold below market value and ended up in the hands of Kocharyan's family. Prosecutors allege that Sarkisyan orchestrated the deal to benefit Toyota Yerevan, tying him directly to the undervalued sale of state-owned property. The case has now been sent to court, and the anti-corruption court is scheduled to begin hearings next week. And this has led to... it's not chaos, it's not, or let's say bad behavior in parliament.
You're very nice.
Okay, then we can leave it at that. I'm sure people have been seeing.
what's happening in parliament. Yes, it did trigger this.
Back and forth.
A lot of cursing, a lot of accusations in parliament. Mm-hmm. Which we're not reporting on because that's exactly what there were. There was no context, much context. There wasn't a new bill that they were debating. Yeah. There was a new agreement that was going to be signed with Azerbaijan that the opposition was against. It was like pure...
tit for tat.
Yes.
And, yeah, just saying nasty things to each other.
Schoolyard kind of...
Yeah, not good examples at all.
Not at all. Yeah. Well, however, the anti-corruption court has been busy in Armenia. Mm-hmm. It has handed down another ruling in a case of illegal appropriation. This time, a 17,000 square meter plot of land. This is next to the Yerevan television tower. This is a tower that you can see from everywhere in Yerevan. Mm-hmm. It's the last remaining piece of any landmark that you can still see. And it will be returned to the state. Its value is estimated at around $2.7 million.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't say who appropriated the land, who did it.
The state is returning.
Okay, there you go. And finally, Ara Badoyan, who is accused of attacking Ararat Mirzoyan on the night of November 9, 2020, when news broke that Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan had signed the trilateral statement ending the Artsakh war, has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. However, he will serve just 11 months, having already spent around 2.5 years in pretrial detention. The Prosecutor General's office says it will appeal the ruling but did not provide further details. That night, as news of the ceasefire spread, riots broke out in Yerevan. Protesters stormed the National Assembly and government buildings, and then Speaker of Parliament Arat Mirzoyan was brutally beaten near the National Assembly, I think, you know, within, you know, an inch of his life.
Right, yes.
Yeah, it was a horrific beating. And this,
and from what I know, he has a metal plate in his face
now. Yeah, you can see it in his mm-hmm, indeed. Well, that was the news of this week. A lot of diplomacy and activity happening. And as always, we briefly talk about the articles that we publish this week. And I guess the best would be to start with this one. It's called Armenia's Innovation Paradox. So we were very late because we didn't know how to deal with the situation, to be quite frank. Lia Shildirup, who was a colleague of ours, a staff writer for Creative Tech section. She was the assistant editor for the tech magazine 374, and she was going to come back to Armenia in May and take up the position of Creative Tech section editor for us. Unfortunately, tragically, Leah was killed in a car accident, and we were left kind of speechless, I think, like
devastated
and speechless. And she was this bright, intelligent, fantastic young woman. And so she had just finished her master's and defended her master's in Estonia. And her thesis, which explores Armenia's innovation paradox, Nijde Sadurian, who was our former editor for Creative Tech, took Leah's thesis and he condensed it. And he's written a fantastic, very informative review of that, which is about the extraordinary tech talent and diaspora support that coexists in Armenia with weak institutions and what Leah had called performative policies. Anyway, so it's called Armenia's Innovation Paradox. It's sort of our, I don't know what to say, our not love letter, tribute to Leah.
Tribute to her and everything she's done for Armenia and for us as well.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So I'm very honored that we had the chance to work with her. And if her family's listening, we all of us here at EVN really loved and respected her.
And another article that we've had in Armenian for a while but hadn't managed to translate yet, it's part of a series about
prison life
in Armenia. This one's called I Choose to Live, Surviving Disability in Armenia's Prison. While some efforts have been made to improve conditions for inmates with disabilities, accessibility measures in Armenia's penitentiary institutions remain piecemeal, and not just penitentiary institutions, across the country,
of
in
course.
Cities and everywhere else. Well, most facilities are still ill-equipped to accommodate people with mobility issues, creating daily challenges for those behind bars, especially.
Yeah. It was a good piece, actually. It was very interesting. The next one by Sosi Tatikyan. You know, she writes extensively for EVN Report. This time she took on EU-Armenia relations. I want to say it's probably one of the most comprehensive pieces, not on EVN Report, in general, about EU-Armenia relations. And so it's called At a Crossroads Between Normative Values and Pragmatism. And she looks at Armenia's deepening relationship with the European Union and how it faces complex challenges and, you know, amid regional pressures and security concerns. And as Yerevan strategically diversifies from Russian influence, EU engagement obviously has grown. However, its impact remains limited without a credible membership path. I mean, you know, we talk about Armenia's a new bill, but we're not sure where that path is going. A strategy tailored to Armenia's vulnerabilities and balancing its normative commitments with its geopolitical and energy interests. Because on the one hand, it's talking about, you know, democracy, human rights, values-based order and all of that. This is the EU. And on the other hand, it's signing deals with Azerbaijan because of energy, right? So it's a long piece, but
well,
definitely
16 pages.
Okay, definitely worth it. Yeah.
Well, it's almost like a white paper if you look at it, because it ends with recommendations and everything. Yeah, well, another very interesting piece, which I we've been talking about, probably will have a continuation.
Absolutely.
Everyone has been telling us, and we've gotten a lot of responses, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yep.
It's Courting Influence, Azerbaijan's Lobbying Network in Italy. It's not the first piece we've published about the subject, but it's the latest.
Yes, and we're expanding slowly, if you will.
Yes, well, the piece looks into Azerbaijan's lobbying efforts in Italy, reveals a coordinated network of academics and media figures promoting pro-Baku narratives. The author explores the ethical concerns, historical distortions, and impact on Italian public discourse, particularly regarding Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh.
Yeah, so for sure we will be continuing with this because, like you said, Rubina, we've had mail from everywhere with people who are saying, look, I know this person, this person, this person. So it's this nefarious network. Fascinating. So yeah, for sure we will be continuing with that. And finally, we published Alexander Thatcher's latest piece called All the Lost Istanbuls. Alexander is a very interesting writer. He delves into, I don't know, I want to say like these alleyways and narrow pathways of life in different places. And this time it's focused on Istanbul, but it's also about this place called Mehane i Ara, which is an Armenian tavern run by this guy named Ara. It's probably one of the last, I don't know, Armenian tavern in Istanbul. And the owner, Ara Haceroglu, preserves centuries-old culinary traditions amid layers of nostalgia for multiple vanished Istanbuls. It's a living testament to the city's fading multicultural past. And he looks at the Jews and the Greeks and the Armenians and the minorities in Istanbul and what the different trajectories of that city. It's a fascinating long read again. In a very Alexander Thatcher-esque.
Yes, he does have like multiple viewpoints. Yeah, I think the last piece was the New Berlin.
Yes.
That was looking into into Georgia, Tbilisi in particular. Now it's kind of the Istanbul's
turn. Anyway, so that's the kind of week we've had here in Armenia. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we'll be back again next week.